Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Another episode of Dr. Homebrew. We are back at it, drinking homebrew this time. I'm excited about it. We're not just like padding the show with commercial beer fluff. Actually, what was our last show? Or wasn't our last show the Schlenkerla show? Or no, we had one after that too, didn't we? Yeah, that's right. I can't remember anymore.
Ben on the next show.
We had Ben on the next show, yeah.
He did a homebrew with us.
Yeah. That's right.
Imperial I'm still Ryan. Excited about the Schlenkerla show. Yeah, that's in my head. So if listeners, if you have not listened to the Schlenkerla show, do yourself a favor and just stop listening to us right now and go download the Schlenkerla show right now.
Schlenkerla your way over there. Yeah, it was cool, man. It was a good show. Oh, dude, I don't even think I put it on YouTube yet. Oops. Oh, well, dude. I'll do that this weekend. What are you going to do, man? Anyway, we're here. We're ready to go. My brain is scattered, man. Al started kindergarten today.
Seriously, really?
Yeah, dude. Whoa. And it's like, I don't know.
The end of July? Do they start early at your district?
Yeah, we're one of those like semi-year-round school districts, I guess, where there's a lot of break days.
Gotcha.
Which is kind of cool. But yeah, July, whatever, 27th seems very early.
Yeah.
So it's just a big disruption to the normal routine in the morning, you know, where it's like you got to suddenly, because she was going to pre-K in the middle of the day, like the last half of the day. So it was like 1 o'clock. Like, okay, no one cares, right? But now it's like 6:45, we're up, the house is going. that is not anywhere near where I want to be.
Was she okay getting dropped off at kindergarten, or did they have to like hang on to her while you ran off?
No, it wasn't that bad. She's pretty cool about it. She was, you know, she said she cried a lot, but you know, I don't care. I didn't see
it's
it.
Normal.
Who cares? Yeah.
First like 2 or 3 days of kindergarten, my daughter, they had to like hold on to her while we ran away, and I felt so shitty. But then, you know, after like 3 days, she was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, she was doing this in pre-K, so I'm not too worried about it. But she keeps telling her mom, like, I don't want to go back to school. And it's like, she's not, as long as she's not telling me that, because she knows enough not to tell me. Because I will shave her head and glue it to her chin, I swear. No, yeah, it's weird, man. It's like a weird emotional thing. And I don't know, just like mentally, I think the whole house is just down right now. So,
yeah.
But we're here, we're drinking some beer with Jason. Jason, my man, welcome to the show.
I have a kindergarten starting in about 2 weeks, so I'm right there with you.
There you go, man. There you go.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. It's weird. Have you done it before? Is this your first kid?
I have a 14-year-old, so she's starting high school. So,
you've been through the whole, now you don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like,
yeah,
whatever, dude.
But so much time has gone by, it's like you've forgotten now. So
I started brewing beer when I found out we were pregnant with our 5-year-old. So at 40.
Was there a cause and effect there, or was that just a mere coincidence?
It's coincidence.
Brian Shaw, are you on your mic or are you on the laptop mic?
I am on my actual mic. Is this not
scratch
let
it
me try turning that up a little bit
scratch
is
your
that
mic
a little better
scratch your mic let me make sure nope you're on your computer mic.
That's so weird. All right, and let me, my computer is on its last legs, and I have a let's try this.
There you go.
How is that now? Okay.
The difference is massive.
My good. My computer's on its last legs. It started to crap out like a week ago.
Yeah.
And it's when stuff like that starts to go bad, you know how it goes. It just starts to go bad all at once. And like the audio stuff is screwing up, and I'm just losing, you know, I don't know. It's bad.
Turn you up though. Turn yourself up.
All right. That's as far up as I go. How's that?
All right, little down.
Good.
Little down. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
How's
about
that?
There. Right about there is fine.
All right.
Yeah.
All right,
Jason.
Nothing the listeners like better than fucking around with audio.
That's right. All right, Jason, you sent us a brown ale with oak spirals and rum. Bumby rum? What kind of rum is this?
Bumbu rum.
Bumbu?
Bumbu rum. Have you ever had it?
No, I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's a pretty good rum. I'm not a rum drinker, but I've come across it through a friend of mine and thought I'd throw it in his brown ale.
Bumbu rum. Okay, well, that's cool. How did? Oh, well, I was going to ask you how you did it, but we'll figure it out when we get there.
I looked it up online, and Bumbu rum is Lil Wayne's rum.
No.
Yeah.
It's
Lil Wayne's
Wheezy,
brand.
Wheezy got a rum a rum label, huh?
Okay. Yeah, bottle looks pretty cool.
All right,
checking it out earlier. Yeah.
We'll have to check it out, man. Bumbu
smells
rum.
Amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah, it smells amazing.
All right, I'm interested. I like rum. I'm a good rum guy, so we'll check this out. Is this something that you've messed with before? Like what? No, just sort of did. Yeah.
Just kind of rolled with it on this one.
Okay, this will be good because we can talk to you about the spirals and maybe like you know, any disinfectant or how did you decontaminate or whatever, all that kind of stuff. That's a whole process in and of itself. First time with oak spirals too, or just straight out the gate?
I've done a Bourbon County Stout before.
Okay,
so I've done it before. But
awesome, excellent. Well, God, let's just jump into the beer, boys. What do you think?
All right,
Cooper. I'm going to make you start.
Okay. So I guess Lil Wayne's not the owner of Bumbu per se, but he is an investor and a loyal brand ambassador.
Ah, okay.
He must just drink a lot of it, so he claims it as his, right? we're learning as we go.
That's right.
Also, the Schlenkerla episode is up on YouTube.
Oh, nice.
I did see that. So we're there. Okay. I'm pouring some in another cup here. I'm going to do that.
Lively.
I just did this. Yeah. This one I got as a judging gift at NHC and tasted it in that one first. I've been experimenting with different glassware as JP likes to do sometimes too.
I love it. It's the best thing ever, dude.
So yeah, we're judging this as a 33B specialty wood aged beer with the Bumbu rum edition and oak with an imperial brown ale base style. And it wasn't declared American or English or anything. And I don't remember, you said you'd submitted this before. And I didn't look back and see whether it was American or English. I just judged it as brown and tried to figure it out as I went along. But you don't necessarily need to say that. If it does lean one way or the other, you can declare it. Imperial brown is just fine to declare it. It's just generically brown, and that's what you want to say about it. Getting into the nose, I'm getting a smooth, low, brown sugar-like richness. That booze comes in medium, low, and kind of sweet. The wood in the nose seems pretty subdued, but it gives a low barrel-like character. Clean, low, toffee-like maltiness. Only a faint, herbal, earthy hop here. Booze, I'd say, is just a bit sharp in character. It's not strong in intensity, but just it pokes out a bit. It's like, oh, hello. You know, something a little bitey about it. But pretty intriguing nose, and I enjoyed that. The beer's color, it's a really pretty burnished reddish brown color. It's pretty clear. And, you know, the foam starts fairly low with a small, you know, light tan bubbles. And in the first pour I did, it faded pretty quickly to zero head. This one's actually sticking around a little better on the second pour. And it's a little warmer at this point too. So I may note some judging differences if it's coming in a little different. I did warm the bottle somewhat before pouring it. This is one you'd probably want to taste a little less on the ice cold side. So it wasn't ice cold, but it's definitely in a little better judging temperature now, I think. Flavor wise, getting a medium low nutty and low toffee like character alongside a pretty substantial oak flavor. There's a little bit of vanilla and some coconut like notes in there with the pleasant rum. Seems more English than American to me. If I was going to say one or the other, I'm not getting a major American hop character. Either that or it may be getting buried a bit, but there's a medium-low bitterness, a low hop flavor, light earthiness kind of seems cleanly fermented. And as I taste it, you know, I got a little bit in the oakiness, a little bit more oakiness as I was tasting it earlier. I don't know if it's a glass difference, but it seems a little more subdued here. I might actually bring it up a point just for fun. But this is a medium-bodied beer. It's not a massive. You said on the bottle you declared 7%, so that's about right. It's big for a brown, but it's not big like barley wine or imperial stout or anything like that. So it's about where it needs to be body wise. I would expect maybe medium full. There's something kind of lightening up the body here, I think. Has a light tannic astringency from the oak, not like a grainy astringency from a poor sparge, but medium low carbonation, somewhat creamy smooth anyway. This seems, I guess I'm saying the beer seems a little watery somehow, despite the moderate strength. I don't know why that is. It's just lacking some beef to me. It's that kind of.
Well, I got beef to spare. I agree. I'm just going to jump in because you seem like you need some help. Not really. I agree with you. I find that too, and I don't know what it is. It's almost like an acidity, maybe. It's like a tart, not a contaminant per se, but like a mineral or some drying effect that's happening. Maybe it's tannins from the oak. We'll see how long the oak was on there or whatever, but maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that the oak is drying things out and not letting some of these flavors linger on your palate in some ways, so it feels a little lighter than it really maybe is. Or if there was a fair amount of booze added, I mean, booze gravity is going to be below zero because it's so much alcohol. It's going to lighten up the body. If there was a shots added to the beer, I don't know if it was just from a barrel addition, but we'll talk about the process later and find out how it was done. Overall, this is a pretty nice Imperial Brown. The wood on the earlier taste I was getting kind of takes over in the flavor. To me, now it's more that kind of lightness that's kind of detracting a little bit from the style coming through as well as I think it should. Just seems the impression is a little unbalanced to me. You could consider a number of things. You can bring up the English character, call it a British, British Imperial Brown, or even, amp up the American hops and more American components and call it American. But first of all, I would probably back off on just the wood addition. And if it was just coming from a barrel, a little less barrel contact time. If there is some alcohol addition in there, I'm speculating now and I shouldn't, but just like lighten that up and let the beer style shine through because something's kind of stomping on it just a little bit. I'm at like a 34, 35. I said I did a 34. I was going to maybe come up a point to 35. But it's a very tasty beer. It's enjoyable to drink. I just don't know quite where to pigeonhole it. And I don't think it would do great in a competition, not because it's not clean, just because the balance is not quite where I'd want it to be for what it's declared. And I'm a little confused. So just blame my confusion mostly. But I'd be curious to hear what Brian has to say about it too. And JP a little more as well.
All right, Char, let's get it. Let's get after it.
All right, let's get after this. First off, first thing we'll get after, Jason, are you in a homebrew club?
No.
I am not. I'm a lone wolf.
All right. Well, that's...
Can I mention, by the way, I'm going to interrupt you, Char. It's a council of Jasons tonight.
You know, I noticed that upon judging this, and it is a total council of Jasons. Yeah. We don't get that very often.
No. It was worth interrupting you for that awesome joke. Go ahead.
Oh, hell yeah, it was. So thank you for sharing this. I judged this as a British Brown myself. Looking at your last email, the previous one that you sent us was a British Brown. So I made an assumption, which may or may not be correct, but based on also just sipping and smelling this beer, it didn't seem like it had the number of hops and the character of an American Brown. I may be totally wrong. We'll find out a little later. But I judge this as like an Imperial wood-aged American Brown in category 33B specialty wood-aged. I also made the assumption you mentioned on the bottle there were oak spirals and bamboo rum. I assumed the spirals have been soaked in rum, so we'll find out a little later. The aroma, initially, so I judged this right out of my fridge because I think Coop and I were both just running around all afternoon and managed to barely squeeze everything in we had to do before the show, right before the show. Which I always tell myself I'm not going to do that, but it's always kind of the way it seems like it works. I got a low medium vanilla, maybe from the oak or the rum, which I really liked. Low ethanol sweetness that wasn't sharp or overwhelming. And it is, you declare 7%. So this is not a 12%, phenol bomb or something. This is a reasonable strength beer. Get a medium dark malt, kind of a little bit of a nutty character. We had a bit of a toffee, but as it warms up, I get more of a nutty character, more like in the vein of like a Newcastle Brown or something like that, which also confirms to me that this is a British Brown base style and not an American Brown. Low fermentation fruitiness character from English ale yeast would be my guess. There's a sort of unique fruitiness that you get from that British fermentation that isn't really it's fruity, but it's attached to a given particular fruit. So I always think of that as that fruity fermentation character. Gave that 8 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Medium brown with, heavy ruby or cranberry. Now, it's hard to see here up in the camera on my laptop, But just looking at this earlier, you know, it's brown to look at it with no light behind it. When I held it up by my window here and had some light, it was like almost like cranberry juice. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but people talk about, you know, the quote ruby highlights, yeah, unquote, of certain malts. And I really liked the color, which was distinctive and unusual, and I think appropriate for the style also. It also reminds me a little bit of the photos of that Bumbu rum that I saw on the Total Wine webpage. Have we talked to Total Wine about being a sponsor? We should really get them to sponsor us. Right. Or, you know, BevMo is, you know, headquartered here in Concord. Anyway, it's very clear. Head is low and persistent, 3 out of 3. Flavor, you know, I kind of agree with Coop a little bit, where it does seem a little oak dominant and a little thin. But I think part of that is the nature of the tannins. And part of it is, if this is really sort of a nut brown ale sort of base style, there's a sort of thinness and character that goes along with that in my mind that is very much present here. Initially, the flavor is fruity with a hint of banana. And this is not like the fermentation fruitiness. And I may have talked myself into that, having read a little bit about the Bumbu rum, that there's a hint of banana. But I did get just a hint of banana at the beginning, not a dunder like a rum fire rum, like the overripe, you know, peel type stuff. But just a little hint of tasty banana. Got a little bit of medium, like a medium level of oak tannin. The malt doesn't come out until mid-palate. Mid-palate, the malt is kind of a low chocolate bitterness. The bitterness and the oak are kind of difficult to distinguish, but collectively they kind of come up to balance mid-palate. It's very well attenuated. There's a little bit of low sweet ethanol in the finish, which is balanced toward oak. But again, just like in the aroma, there's some alcohol here, but it's not phenolic. It's not fusely. It's not unpleasant. It's just that sweet ethanol, which you would want to have from something that has rum or some kind of high alcohol character to it. So give the flavor a 13 out of 20. Mouthfeel, body's medium, carbonation's medium, slight warming, neither creamy nor astringent, 5 out of 5. Overall impression, I gave it a 7 for a total of 36. I like this beer a lot, and I think this concept is really on point and really goes, you know, the slight banana and this rum character, I think, really matches well with the nutty and slight toffee of the malt and of this style. In my opinion, it probably just needs a little more time for the tannins to settle down, because oak, any kind of oak-aged beer, and especially one that is like, in my mind, like I was saying earlier, that nutty character of a nut brown ale, and has a tendency to lend itself to a perception of thin body. And I think combined with the tannin, it can give a perception that may not be accurate about something being thinner than it is. And it also does dominate the flavor like a beer that's wood-aged that has not aged enough. And I, you know, made a note that I think in 2 to 6 months, this will be phenomenal. But right now, 36 is the high end of very good for me. And, you know, watch you tell us you've already aged this for 5 years. But
you'll see the flavors meld and stuff over time. Yeah.
Exactly. I think this will meld over time and be really excellent in, you know, in a few months. So thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I just to chime in here, because I'm a bit of a wood head and a rum head, I guess. I'm interested to know about the oak spiral usage, because that can throw stuff, and I think it could be overly complicated depending on the wood quality of the rum. Now, not having had this rum before, you know, rums are usually aged in, like, you know, old bourbon barrels, so you get a lot of that kind of quality going on. I don't know if this is a barrel heavy sort of aged rum, so you already have a lot of that content in the spirit, and then you know presumably, I would guess, you would like soak the oak in the spirit, and you can sort of impart, I think you can maybe double up on some of those tannins a little bit if you're not careful. I think it tastes good. There is a lighter, like you said, Char, like a nut brown ale quality to it. And then, like Cooper, it's sort of like, I don't really know what to, I'm confused, because like the initial hit is one of like, it's a thick, bigger, you know, brown ale. And then it sort of just washes away. So it's weird. I do enjoy the flavors a lot. I think the flavors are good. That rum works pretty well with your recipe as far as the flavor contribution goes. It is light. There are like lighter fruit notes to it. It's not heavy like you can get with some of these darker rums, or just rums in general. Barbados rums tend to be, I think, on the sort of lighter side anyways, of those flavors. But I like it. It's just not enough at the back end to be supported. The initial part is great. Yeah, I would go like 36, 38. I mean, I think the rum you chose is great. I think the recipe's good as well. I would love to know what's going on there to connect those two. So over to you, Jason. Let's talk a little bit about your recipe and how you use this stuff.
So I don't know if you guys remember when I sent this in 3 years ago. Probably not. I sent you guys some brown ale that was undercarbonated, and I sent you another version that was more carbonated that I fixed over time, and ended up getting like a 38 and a 40. So this is that base recipe, but with a twist. And I think I took it in the wrong direction. And you guys are all, you're calling out the English. It's got Nottingham yeast, but I'll just go through the recipe right now. It's 10 pounds of Maris Otter, 2 pounds of Vienna malt, a pound of Crystal 60, a pound of flaked oats, 8 ounces of pale chocolate, 8 ounces of Victory malt. And then the twist is I had some, and this is a typical home brewer. I had a pound of the candy syrup D45.
Okay.
And I threw in there.
Okay.
I think that's where y'all picking up on the thinness. And okay. I threw in another 7 ounces of D180.
Oh, wow. That might be part of where you're getting some of this really cool colors in here too.
Yes.
It looks like,
yeah,
the color, the fruitiness too. Yeah. Like there's a lot going on in there.
It looks like a lens when you hold it up to a light, and it's so like reddish orange and just burnished. Like, yeah, like Brian was saying, just really cool color.
Yeah. Now that you've said the, with the candy syrup,
yeah,
candy sugar. Now I'm suddenly, and that hint of banana, which is probably from the rum. I'm all of a sudden thinking Belgian.
Yeah. You get that without the phenols or esters or whatever they are from the yeast,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Do you guys get sweet, like a perfume almost in the taste? Like my mouth is like, it's like inhaling perfume kind of. Do you get that at all?
The taste,
yeah,
like a little floral.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, I'd like a man's hat or like a plum served in a in perfume floating in the middle of a man's hat. It's an old Simpsons with Yoko Ono. Sorry,
I was like, oh yeah, okay.
It's a bit too obscure.
Good.
All right,
I think JP, you liked it last time with it without the syrup and the, because it's so British. It is leaning on the British side, which it's my thing. I like the Belgium or the English stuff a lot more than the American version of this style.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big American brown guy. I don't really care for a lot of that big.
I think that the sugar just kind of dried out your body, and it made the oak maybe a little rougher than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And with a little more residual sweetness, that beer kind of needs it. On the English side, you want to have something a little malty sweet to play off the darker malt flavors and have it really work.
Yeah, well, and especially with with the rum addition too.
Yeah, it would need to stand up to that.
Yeah. Let's talk oak and the rum and how you added that.
So I had two medium oak spirals that I soaked in bamboo rum, and I only put one of the spirals in the keg and 4 ounces of the rum. That was it. I couldn't tell you how long I did it, but
like a month, 2 months?
Probably a month or so.
Okay.
So you added 4 ounces of the rum and you didn't soak the spirals in it? Okay, gotcha.
I let the oak soak in the rum to kind of soak up the wood flavor, and then poured the whole, just kind of discanted the whole thing into the keg.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
You know, I like that approach, because then you're not screwing around with having to get the wood out of the keg.
Right.
I haven't heard of, I don't recall hearing people doing that. And I think that's really kind of creative.
So the spiral didn't go in the beer at all.
Yeah, it went in the keg.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Oh, it did. Okay.
I
misunderstood.
They just added the whole thing. So I think, I don't know.
I put the 4 ounces of rum in there with it. So
I think you have also maybe a little bit more tannin from, because the rum has the tannins from the process, then it has the tannins from the wood that you soaked, and then you took everything and dumped it all in, and then it got more tannins as it aged on the thing. So that might be some of it too, why it's sort of like drying out, you know, and very like
I think that's from the sugar,
dry,
I guess.
Too, yeah. I don't know. That's the thing. Who knows? I don't know. There's a lot going on that could contribute to that. But you know, I know what you mean. You don't want to like dump out 4 ounces of rum. You want to add that in there. So, I don't know. I like it. I think maybe it's too much rum and it's covering up your malt.
The other way to go is just to, you know, join a homebrew club, convince somebody in the club to buy a rum barrel and just convince everybody to brew 5 gallons of something and put it in there. And then you're just in the barrel. You're not messing around with the spirals and dumping in extra booze.
Spirals
and,
are fine. The cubes are good. I've done those.
Yeah.
Those work great. You know, but I think with those kind of, you know, thicker pieces of wood, they need to sit a lot longer in the beer, like 2-3 months.
Would you soak the spirals in the booze and just put the spirals in, JP?
I don't know what I would do. I think I would probably soak the spirals a little bit, take them out, put them in the beer, and then if I need to add more spirit, I would just do that fresh off the bottle.
Save and blend it in. Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's what I would do to really control, because you know, you can have a lot of the char from the charring of the staves or the cubes or the spirals or anything like that. You can get that settles down at the bottom, and then it's just, I don't know, there's just a lot more contact time that you're not really controlling when you're just sort of putting it all in. How much it matters, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where I guess you kind of control what you think you can control, something like that. I don't know. I've never done it both ways. So
what do y'all think about the Nottingham yeast?
I think that's working fine for you.
I think it's cool. Yeah. I wouldn't really change that kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, agreed.
Brian and I, we both got kind of a pleasant English-like fermentation character, just clean and, you know, a little characterful, a little fruity.
Your fermentation was great, I thought. I didn't see any issues with that at all.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and I want to talk with Jason a little bit more about what he's looking for, what he likes, and how we can sort of let him keep his ingredients, but add a little more body here at the end. So hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back. What's up, homebrewers? Hey, let me ask you a question. You spend a lot of time making your beer taste the way you want it to, right? Some of you even send beers in to Dr. Homebrew for feedback. Well, the next logical step in your creativity is to craft some labels for those beers. And there's nobody better at creative labels than GrogTag. Their easy-to-use designs let you turn out some pretty amazing stuff like labels, bottle caps, coasters, even six-pack carriers with minimal effort on your part. They have a range of label sizes that fit any vessel you can think of. Bottles, cans, growlers, kegs. GrogTag has you covered. Head over to GrogTag.com today and check out their line of amazing, fully customizable templates and get your beer looking its best. GrogTags are water resistant, reusable, and will have your naked bottles looking great in no time. That's GrogTag.com, and be sure to use code BNARMY at checkout to save 10% on your order.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. So, Jason, before we left on the break, we were just getting into what I wanted to ask you about is your thoughts on it. What do you think is up with the beer? What do you like about it? What do you want to see improved, if anything? Maybe this is great for you. What do you want to do?
So, this beer is a beer I've done several times before, but I tried to imperialize it and kind of make it a little special. I don't know if y'all have had Dogfish Head, Palo Santo Marron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of, I'm trying to go in that direction with it, which I completely feel like I missed the mark trying to do my own thing. But I would probably lay off the sugar next time and, mm-hmm. and just bump up the base malt to get the OG, you know, and go that route and probably get completely out of, get away from the candy sugar, you know, that and just completely disregard it whatsoever. So
yeah, I think just imperialize it by adding more malt and just let it, yeah, the sugar.
Not guilty of throwing in some extra, you know, that stuff's not cheap. So yeah. I just use it while I had it.
Yeah, yeah. Use those for your Belgians and do it with English beers. Yeah, more malt.
Yeah. The hard part is it is imparting some really cool flavors.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have to pick one or the other, I guess, right?
I would probably, I think if I were to use the sugar again, I'd get rid of the D180 and just use a pack of the D45 and see what that does to it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. I think, I think like the lower number in anything is better, like crystal malt, you know, the candy sugar too. I think it's that right amount of, I don't know, toffee flavors, but you can sort of sit in that stone fruit area.
Right.
For flavors too. Right. I mean, it's a unique beer. Yeah. Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
Part of the inspiration might be to use a sugar in something that's made with rum. So sugar complexity with other sugar complexity, you know, distilled sugar spirit, basically. So
does it come across busy to you guys? It seems like it's got a lot, you know what I mean? It seems like it's going in a bunch of different directions.
I don't think so. I don't know, only in the sense that it starts one way and finishes another. But like flavor wise, I like that aspect. There is a lot going on. There's a lot to kind of figure out here. I just wish it had the body to finish up at the end. That's the only thing I think it's missing. I think it's a really cool beer. Yeah. Maybe
the way it seems a little disjointed to me is from the aroma to the flavor, because the aroma was really promising and pretty nicely balanced. But then in the flavor, it's, you know, it's kind of a more of a one trick pony with just the dryness, letting the oak stick out a little much. And the malt is there. There isn't a lot going on, but there's a lot declared here too. So I just think, I don't know, declare it as English. And, you know, I think the flavors that are going on here are interesting and complex, but yeah, it's just the dryness that's preventing them from shining properly. With a little sweetness accent, yeah, it'd be just fine.
Yeah, I don't think anything is busy here at all. I think it, if anything, is maybe a little one-dimensional. And the more I think about it, the more I think it's that 180 candy sugar, because that it's like a 180 malt. It's like adding Special B, right? When you add Special B,
right,
it's great. It's a great malt, but you don't want to add more than just a tiny, tiny bit, because then it takes over. And I think that 180 candy sugar can be the same. Yeah, it's that same like Lovibond. It's that same territory. And it's getting to that point where, and you've already added something else. I think maybe if you just hadn't added that, we'd be looking at giving this maybe a 38 or 40.
Yeah, because what does that cover up? Like you said, sort of like it takes over. What would that be with that 45 sugar still? Like I would be interested to see this beer in a couple different ways. One, take out the D80, D180 sugar, whatever it is. Take that out and do everything the same. Then brew it again with without any rum.
Yeah.
With that oak spiral, put it in there with the D45 sugar. I'm curious to see what that would do. And then you can, you know, you can dose a little rum back if you need to. But I don't know. I think that 45 sugar is a really unique concept in how it works with this. With this malt, I think the rum addition is sort of messing with it a little bit. I think it makes it a little too hot, a little too, I don't know. It's funky. Yeah. This is a weird beer, Jason.
One thing we didn't talk about, this beer is September will be a year.
Wow. So,
Okay. I was joking when I said in 2 to 6 months, it'll be great. But no, it's already been, it's almost a year.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you what, it's holding up great. It's your packaging is exemplary, because I'm not getting cardboard. I mean, do you guys get cardboard or paper or anything that says, I get nothing that says this is a year old, that it's almost a year old, and you shipped it to us from that. And where are you from, Jason?
Mississippi.
Yeah, you shipped it to us in the summer from Mississippi, and it tastes good. And I would say I cannot pick out a single clue that this is a year old.
Yeah. No,
So well done on that, man. That's really, really excellent.
I had another suggestion that you could try if you want. Since the goal here, JP likes the compliment of the 45 sugar edition. And you know, I kind of like the sugars here too. But to bring up the sweetness, you can't really back sweeten it. I mean, you could put, you know, you could back sweeten it and taste it, but you know, that's going to ferment out. But do a little higher mash temperature the next time and perhaps add some dextrin malt or something else to give it a little more body at the same time. Add maybe most of those sugars or lighten up the darker one a bit or just do the lighter one and then do those tricks to kind of bring in the sweetness with the sugar because that's going to dry out. But if you have a balance with some, some less fermentable sugars in there in the mix, it'll still leave a residual sweetness for all those nice flavors to play off of. That's what I think, but that's just something to try, including all those other things JP said to try. So they have 45 batches of beer to brew. We'll talk to you in 3 years again.
Yeah.
Send us a couple of cases with every combination. Yeah.
It really is enjoyable. I didn't mean to give it short shrift here or anything. It's more a balanced thing, and it's like just plays a little odd despite all the really pleasant flavors in here. So appreciate you sharing it, and it was really fun to judge and taste with you.
Yeah. You have any questions, Jason?
Thank you guys. I'll give it another go at it and see what it comes up with.
Yeah, don't give up on it. I think it's a cool concept. I'm sure it's an expensive beer to make, so deal with that. But it's pretty unique, and I appreciate you sharing with us.
And you can do a split batch, make some of the Imperial Brown, and then add the stuff to the other half.
Yeah.
And get twice the beer for your money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. All right. Well, if that's it, we'll let you go, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Thank you. I'll stay between the lines.
You got it, brother.
You too.
Later. Yeah, that was weird. It was unique. I liked it.
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah.
I like his concept, and I think that you're right, Jason, that there's just I don't think he's going the wrong direction. I think that maybe just like everything when you're trying the new concept, you just have to try some different things and you accept that as you're heading down that path, you might need to back up a step and maybe take a slightly different fork in that road, but it doesn't mean you're going the wrong way.
I'll tell you too, next time I'm in a rum bar, I might taste a little bit of that bamboo just for fun, just to see what it tastes like on its own. I won't go out and buy a bottle, but it seems like a good rum and it was fun.
It does seem like a good rum. It seems very floral and good. And, that's the Barbados rums can be kind of like, I don't know, sweeter, heavy kind of thing. Jamaican rums are usually lighter, if I recall correctly. Dominicans are sort of like spicier or whatever. They have like more, yeast profile or whatever. But I don't know. I'm not that well versed on it. But yeah, I liked it. It was good. But far be it for me to suggest not putting rum in it.
You should add like one shot of rum fire with that dunder, that banana dunder.
Oh, geez,
just dude. Get that little bit. Man, that's some good shit right there.
Yeah, that stuff is weird, man. Dr. Bird is another one.
That's so weird.
There's a few of them. There's a few of them out there.
Dr. Bird, you said?
Yeah, Dr. Bird. There's another one. But anyway, let's, I guess let's take a break. And we'll come back and we will talk a little bit about our brew days. We're talking about Mexican lager, right, Coop? That's next on the docket.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. Yeah, it was, when was it right now? A month ago, a month and a half ago or something like that? We planned a Mexican lager beer, a recipe, in case anybody missed it. And we were all going to brew it. It's the same recipe, but we're doing it different ways. And I thought it'd be cool. Then we pile all the beers together and we try to judge them blind as best as we can and see who is the ultimate Mexican lager brewer. Not really that serious, but I think it'd be interesting for all of us to taste a relatively similar recipe. So last weekend, we all converged on more beer in Concord, and that was fun. And we got all our ingredients, man. Got a bunch of flaked corn and various other stuff. What was our recipe? It was I'll refresh everybody's memory. It was for a 5 gallon batch in Bruzilla is what this was. Oh, did I not adjust my equipment on my friggin' beersmith? That's what I didn't do. All right, well, I can't do it now. I think that's why my numbers were a little off. But anyway, 5 gallons, standard all grain 5 gallons. You had 14.4 pounds of, we used Victory 2-Row, right, fellas? Fellas.
Which 2-Row? Hello?
It was
Hello?
The light, the Victory Extra Pale.
Oh, the Viking, extra pale. Not the Viking. It was the Viking
oh,
yeah. Extra Pale.
Victory Viking, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Viking, okay. Viking Extra Pale. 4.14 pounds of Viking Extra Pale. Okay. A lot of weird words there. 1 pound, 10 ounces of Vitamin Pills, and 1 pound, 10 ounces of flaked corn, and 3.1 ounces of Vienna malt, just to make it complicated. And then the hops are all 0.37 ounces. You had Magnum at 15.7%, Alpha at 60 minutes. Spalt was 4.30 alpha at 5 minutes, and then Tetnang was 2.6 alpha at 5 minutes. There you go. That was it. And then we used different yeasts. So I used the dried German lager yeast from Cellar. What was it? Cellarcraft, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cellar Science. Cellar Science.
Cellar Sciences.
Yeah. And I haven't used dry yeast. I can't begin to tell you when. I mean, maybe. I don't know, in early aughts. I haven't used dry yeast in forever. So I thought it'd be fun, you know, especially because there was no lager yeast, dried lager yeast when I was doing it. So I thought that would be cool. So I grabbed 2 packs of that and dumped it in mine. And Cooper, what did you use?
I used the Omega, the Lutra Kvike.
Yeah, you're doing a Kvike yeast. And why did you pick that one? Just because...
Well, I judged the best of show last summer, early fall, whatever it was, I'm trying to remember when, but we had an American light lager that just was sitting on the table, and like usually those things they start tasting odd after a while sitting there, and they just they don't always win best of shows because there's so many more other more intense things that are gonna work better for a judge's palate. It's just like, but this just kept being just a perfect light American lager one. Just kept tasting like I couldn't knock it out. Nobody else could knock it out. And then it ends up winning the best of show, and the guy jumps up and he's like, Lutra, baby. he's just like this boisterous dude.
Wow.
Danny, and just he was excited to win that best of show, and he got like a big sigh of an oak barrel with the award inscribed on it, and he was excited. But I talked to him a little bit. I was like, oh, that was Lutra. I'd never mess with it, but it is it's isolated from a blended Norwegian Kvike. It's one of the elements in that, which it's usually a harmonious balance of different things working together. But somebody had made this, there's a story about it, you can read it on their literature, how this guy made a Helles with it and brought it to this beer festival event. And people were like, wow, you made that with a Kvike yeast. And he made it with the mother of the Lutra, but it might have been a Lutra dominant thing. So they went in there and they isolated all the different components in there, did the marking with the genetic, however they do that with it shows all the stripes a certain way. And like, these two match, these are the same. These two are unique. This is,
okay.
They pulled that one out and brought it up. And they found that it creates less, fewer esters in the ferment.
Hmm.
It also ferments incredibly fast, and it tolerates very high temperatures. So,
Sounds great.
I fermented at 78, and it was bubbling like mad within just a minute. As soon as I pitched it, I did a...
No, it wasn't. Stop it.
It was starting to bubble. It was starting to bubble, and it was...
As soon as you dumped it in, it was yet high Krausen. Wow, that's so crazy.
And I put it in there, and I took a little bit, and there was bubbles starting to come out. It was going... So, and then I checked it the next morning. It was bubbling nicely. 2 days later, I checked it and it had stopped. It's not bubbling anymore. 2 days.
Did you take a gravity reading?
I just took a gravity reading on another sample that I had put in my shake starter growler, and it wasn't clean words, right? I couldn't really taste it from that. I didn't pull anything out of the fermenter yet, but it was already at 10.08. So within, and this is 4 days after I started it.
Wow. God, dude, I don't know about that.
I don't know either. I've never used it. I've had some, at Homebrew Con where they've, brought different beers out. They did one in Providence where they had a Lutra, and they had some traditional ones, and a lot of people liked the more traditional ferments better, but it wasn't that much different. We tasted them, it wasn't that much different, and they had similar profiles, but. It's kind of a cheap fast lager, pretend lager, whatever you want to call it. But
yeah,
I'll probably lager it still and just cold condition the beer too.
Oh, sure, dude. Time. Yeah.
I have time to.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah, so I had a problem with mine. I mean, not really a problem, but, you know, it was fucking hot when I was brewing. So my groundwater, I could not get my cat, stop. I couldn't get my wort down past 87. I took my 5-gallon bucket, put some water in it, coiled the hose in there, dumped a bunch of ice in there, and it just didn't really work as well as I wanted it to cool my beer down.
Yeah.
So I had to rack it into the conical. It's a temperature-controlled, old-school Moorbeer conical. And eventually it got down to 67. It dropped 20 degrees by midnight, so it took about 6 hours or so, maybe 8. And then I just ripped these two packets open, these two, I don't know how many grams there were, but, one's for 5 gallons. So I'm like, well, if one's good, two is better. I didn't do a starter. I didn't rehydrate. I just sprinkled them right on top, closed the damn thing, and went to bed. And
Those cellar science packs are 12 grams each. 12 so that's grams, that's right. plenty of yeast there, 24 grams in a 5-gallon batch.
Yeah, I think so too. And so what I normally do when I'm brewing is because I don't oxygenate. I always forget to do that. I don't have a system, right? So I'm like, oh man, when I go to the store, like, got this. Oh, I barely remembered PBW. And I don't want to muck about with cleaning an oxygen system. So I just don't do it. But I just over pitch, or at least pitch more yeast than I normally would. And so what I usually do is I just wake up in the morning and then shake the shit out of the car, out of the conical, and I did that, and I about jumped back because the amount of fucking fire this thing spit at me in the bucket, the blow up bucket, it was sounded like a hot rod popping off. I'm like, oh my god, dude, it was going nuts, man. I opened the little bit, just thick white foam on top of the thing. I was like, oh man, I'm stoked. And for the past like couple days, that was I did Monday, so that was on Tuesday, so Wednesday, Thursday, yeah, the past couple days. Just shake it, and it's just it's dying off a little bit now. So I kept the temp low. Like I said, I pitched at 67. By the time I woke up, it was like 62, 60, something like that. Kept bringing it down to about 54, 55, which is fine, but then I'm like, okay, then I start being a home brewer. Then I go, well, the first couple days is when you're going to get all your ester profiles anyway. Yeah. So what the fuck does it matter? So I just kicked it up to 68 is where I set it at. And so let it just kind of free rise. I'm just going to let it finish out there. For a couple of reasons. One, because it already sort of started warm to begin with. I don't know that I'm going to get those classic kind of sort of like cleaner lager type flavors. The other thing is when I opened it yesterday, opened the top, I wanted to see it and smell it, and I figured it was safe because the CO2 is popping off like crazy. It smells great. I like the aromatics that are coming off of it. So I'm like, okay, if I like the way it smells, it's probably going to taste ish similar, right? So I'm not like getting crazy weird like apple esters or banana or whatever. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to let it just come up to 68 and let it hang out there and let it really finish off, then bring it down and keg it, lager it. That's my thought. What do you think about that? It's all right, right?
It'll make beer.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. And Char, you haven't brewed yet. You're too busy.
Actually, I have. I brewed today.
You did.
I want to back up a second. I want to thank More Beer for sponsoring our ingredients and for sponsoring this beer.
Yes.
And you know what? It was really nice. It was really cool to see you guys on Sunday. And I'll tell you, I was not enthusiastic to get up and go to More Beer on Sunday morning and see you guys. Not because of you guys. Because I was like, oh, God, I haven't brewed in 6 years. I'm not excited about doing this. Why are we doing this? This is pissing me off. I'd rather go back to bed. And I find myself fine. I get up and I kind of drag myself over to More Beer. And when I got there and we started picking out the ingredients, and we started chewing the grains and we started walking around. This is not bullshit. I actually started to get excited about doing this beer.
Nice.
It was, and we were there for probably I'd say we were there an hour and a half, just looking at stuff and dicking around and something looking like at that. Yeasts and grains and whatever. And I really enjoyed it. And I was having a good time and I got my stuff home.
Gotcha.
And
back in.
I thought that was cool. And, for listeners that may have not brewed for a while, I get it. Shit happens. Life is not a straight line. And sometimes for whatever reason, you work or kids or health or whatever. you take a break for a period of time, you know, it never hurts. You'll go back to your local homebrew shop. You know, I'm lucky that my local homebrew shop is the Board Beer flagship and they have everything you could possibly ever want.
Yeah.
But you know, that was excited. But then, you know, I was telling you guys, I had a colonoscopy on Tuesday and it was the one they go in both ends. So, I mean, I didn't know, I was knocked out real good, but I had a lot of stuff to do Monday and then Wednesday, cause I was out of commission pretty much all Tuesday, right? And it's like, what are you saying, JP? Like, they had me up like on a spit? Yeah, I don't know.
They spit roasted my boy, dude. Yeah.
Just
turning him over both ends.
So that I was out of commission all Tuesday. And then I was like, well, shit, we're talking about this on the show on Thursday. So I'm going to brew this morning. So I'll tell you a little, I made some notes. I won't go on too long, but you know, what I've got is like a spaghetti pot with the strainer for the pasta.
Yeah.
I have like a big Le Creuset Dutch oven. And I thought maybe I could do it all in my spaghetti pot, but I couldn't.
And then
I thought, well, I can do it partly with the Le Creuset.
Okay.
So, okay, fine. I got some Crystal Geyser water. I used Brewer's Friend, which, you know, for a free software that I used to use ProMash. Tells you, this is how old I am.
Oh,
all
ProMash,
of my recipes
dude, yeah.
were on ProMash. Even like into the 20 teens, that were mid 2010s, I was limping along with like an emulator or something to use ProMash because it's not supported.
Dude.
It's that has all my recipes. I'm going to switch to Beersmith at some point, I think, mm-hmm. but I just didn't have time to download it and learn it. I just needed to be able to do something. So well, I used Brewer's Friend.
ProMash is so old that it came on the floppies. Not like the not like the big floppies, but like the hard, the disc 3.5-inch floppies.
The 3.5-inch floppy that you would get at the homebrew store. Yeah. And it was only later on. Could you ever download it, or was it always a thing you had to get off the floppy?
I don't remember. I think you could at some point. I don't remember.
Yeah. I know I would drag it from one computer to another going forward. I think maybe you never could download it.
Hmm.
But that thing was pretty awesome. But you know, it's like you get used to a tool. It's like any you get used to a tool. I'm sure it's no better or worse than anything else.
Yeah,
it's
that's
what you
how,
learn and get used to.
That's how listeners feel about our show.
Yeah, you know, we get old and people get used to us.
Yeah.
So I got some Crystal Geyser natural alpine spring water because I didn't want to screw around with water. Okay, it's drinking water. It'll be fine. I used to do that back in the day. It'll be all right. And Brewer's Friend said, use 3 gallons to get 2 gallons of fermentable wort. Okay, that makes sense because you're boiling and you're losing stuff. Water gets stuck in the mash. FYI, I'd calculated mine down to do 2 gallons of wort, not the 5 that you guys did.
Okay,
because I don't have all the stuff. So first, I tried to see how much water I could get in the pasta pot, and I got about 2 gallons in there. With enough space for the grain. And that's when I realized I have to do something else. And then I'm like, well, I don't have something big enough to boil it all together. So what I'll do is, well, everything's heating. You know, I got my sparge temperature. I just sparged at 170. So I overshot my mash. You know, it's typical. I'm trying to do some work and I'm at the stuff on the stovetop. I overshot my mash by a little bit. Not a huge deal. Overshot strike water by about 10 degrees. I had room to add additional Crystal Geyser. So I got it right down to where it should be. I was targeting 150F strike and I got 149. So, you know, that's even using some janky ass shit and a calculator I've never used before. You know, I managed to get it to be right where I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes later, I lost a couple degrees. Well, that's fine. I just turned up the pot, got it up to about, you know, 155, 160, right where I wanted that to be. Turned it off. It was fine until the end. When I poured in that milled grain and that flaked corn, oh my God, that aroma. I had not smelled that aroma for about 6 years. I actually texted Graham and told him, hey man, this is amazing. I mean, this is really cool. And he texted me right back. Hey, I love that for you, man. I took a break for a while too. And it's great when you smell it. And it was cool to hear from Chris, but I wanted to thank him too for sponsoring stuff. But it's like, you know, when you've been brewing, you know, I started brewing in like 1994. It's almost 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
And it's something that's a part of your life for so long. And you take a break for a few years and then you smell that and you're like, oh yeah, oh, this is why I do that. And it's not even the alcohol. It's not necessarily the end product. It's just, if you love to homebrew, you're loving different aspects of this hobby. And there's certain aspects nobody likes, the cleaning. Mm-hmm. But there's some things, you know, you should, if you love everything about this, you know, you start to do it. So what did I start doing afterwards while, you know, during the mash, I started looking at the sales on morebeer.com for like, what's a Brewzilla cost? And, you know, they're on sale. They're having a summer sale. You know what I mean? It's just, well, how cheap could I start brewing again? Brewing like, you know, 3 gallons at a time.
Cheap.
Yeah. And you can.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. It's small. I loved my old, I had a system I could brew 10 to 15 gallon batches on. I had 20 gallon kettles, the top tier stand, you know, all that stuff. And I loved it. And it was great for what it was. I barely had space for it then. And I sure don't have space for it now. And I'm closer to 60 than not. And I don't want to be lifting all this shit around and taking an entire weekend. And I realized just doing the stuff on the stovetop, I can get myself like a Brewzilla. I can get ingredients. I could brew on like a Monday morning, be done by lunch, and not even really do that much. And it's not going to cost much. So that's a neat thing. So anyway, I got done with my mash. I started thinking, well, how am I going to get this wort into this Dutch oven? So it was going to go everywhere. So what I did is I lifted up the pasta straining thing with the grain. I set that down in the Dutch oven, and then I poured my wort over through that to kind of sparge it a little bit.
Okay.
On the way in there.
Sure.
I put that thing back in. It was actually both vessels ended up being, one is kind of taller and one is squatter. They both had about the same volume, so I couldn't get everything out into the Dutch oven, but that worked out good. I put my grain back in the spaghetti pot, put the other, you know, rest of my water in, so it still mostly covered the grain, and just cranked up on the stove to hit 170, just like if I were like fly sparging or if I were in my old system. I'd usually go to 170, let it sit for 30 minutes. And I decided to parallel boil because I didn't have anything else I could do. I could not, I did not have one vessel that I could, and I could put everything in. And this is when I realized, as I was talking to you guys, that, you know, I kind of wanted to go a little janky with this because I wasn't sure at the beginning how much I wanted to buy a bunch of equipment for this show and learn and start brewing again. And then I thought, you know, it'll be good podcasting regardless, because here I am. I got two parallel boils going on at the same time. Started that about 1 o'clock this afternoon. I eyeballed the hops because, as Jay-Z would say, I don't have a scale good enough for measuring cocaine.
Right.
So I had to just kind of, I might be making more of a Mexican cold IPA. We'll see. But I probably added a few more hops than I needed to. Then I realized I didn't have a funnel. So I finished my boil. I turned everything off. I just left it uncovered on the stove. Hoped that, you know, none of the kids would, you know, drop anything in there if going in the microwave, because the microwave's over the stove. But I wanted to let it cool off. Went and got my wife at work. We stopped at More Beer, got a funnel, went to Costco and came home. And then I poured the stuff into a keg. And it looks like maybe 2 gallons.
Okay.
This is... and, you know, I didn't take an original gravity because I realized, you know, the gravity is going to be different between these two vessels. And I didn't want to pour them together and then like shove my arm in there or something and risk contamination. So what I did is about 5 o'clock tonight, I put that wort in a keg because that was going to be a fermenter. It's an old keg that's clean. I PBW'd it and I star sanded it. It's clean. I put it in a little fridge out in the garage, and I figure in the morning it'll be about 36 and I will pitch some White Labs Mexican lager yeast. But I mean, the key thing to me is whatever equipment you've got, if you want to brew, just brew.
Just brew, man.
You know, it's and that's like Justin said that like early on in the Brewing Network, you know, get some water and some grain and, you know, just fuck it. It'll make beer. It'll be good. It'll be something. And, you know, as long as you have some sanitation and whatever, you know, it may not be, this is not going to win a competition. It's not going to be perfect. I think that in a triangle test, you'll pick mine out compared to you two, not in a good way.
Maybe.
But you know what? Just brew. You know, it didn't cost very much. I used stuff I had.
You did a lot of figuring.
Things I want to get. I did a lot of thinking. I did a lot of, you know, part of the fun of homebrewing is just is problem solving too. And I don't, you know, how many times have we talked to homebrewers or have we had, you know, professional brewers on the session or whatever, and they talk about, like colossal fuck ups they recovered from.
Oh, sure.
And that's part of the fun. I didn't have any colossal fuck ups. I had a few things that I'd forgotten. I had a few things I hadn't anticipated. But I mean, we've talked to home brewers, people of, you know, Brewing Network has talked to professional brewers that have had things go colossally wrong.
Absolutely.
And part of being a brewer, whether you're a pro brewer or a home brewer, whatever, is being able to adjust and adapt on the fly.
Yep.
And just solve problems. And that's it can be fun when you know how to do it, and it's a good skill for life, you know?
That's right. Well, good job, Char. I'm glad you
well done.
Glad you got through that or whatever. I don't know. I tuned out a couple times, but it sounds like it went well. Sounds like it went well for you.
I'm sorry that happened to you, or congratulations, yeah. I guess, as the meme goes. I kind of tuned out.
I think all three of our batches are going to be different because, you know, mine was on the Pico.
Yeah.
I just got it going, and we ran off and watched a movie. And I was monitoring it from the theater, and like, yeah. Then we, like, oh, I had enough time to go get a beer after the movie and hang out and chat out. And then I look, and like the cycle was interrupted. I'm like, oh, crap. So I came home and the Pico was beeping at me loudly. Beep, beep. I was okay. It's like, that was like hot sensor. Cause I don't know if it wasn't time to clean it yet, but I probably should have done a clean. I did a rinse cycle as I do before each brew. But if stuff isn't flowing right in there, it overheats inside and it'll turn off because it overheats.
You gotta
did that.
Brewzilla, you guys.
Couple times. Yeah.
So you were that guy at Barbie that had his screen on and people were like, why is that guy's screen on? We're trying to pay attention to the movie.
Yeah. I'm monitoring my brew. Come on.
Yeah, the Brewzilla, yeah. The only annoying part about it is you just have to, you know, I got a 5 gallon kettle to heat my sparge water and you lift that malt pipe up and you know, just sparge over, but it was fine. Like even in the mess up, it was supposed to be original gravity of 1045. Let me change that and see if that does anything. No, yeah, it's fine. 1045, and I got 1042. They're pretty good, you know. And I was,
that's real good, man.
Added a little water, and you know, I don't know. Just I kind of was like mucking about with stuff. Like I want to make sure I have 5 gallons when I'm done because last beer I didn't really. So yeah. Anyway, good stuff. I can't wait for it. It tasted great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to drinking it. But anyway, that's about it. So yes, like Char said, thank you to More Beer for sponsoring this segment of us brewing this Mexican lager.
For sure. Yeah. Cheers.
Yeah. Good stuff. And, you know, always love going there and checking out the new equipment they got. They got a ton of stuff, man. It's always a good time.
Yeah.
And of course, thank you to our show sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. You go to fivestarchemicals.com today and learn about the best way to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment, which is, of course, with Five Star Chemicals. And then you can go to their website, /homebrew-club-program. Sign up for that homebrew club program. It's really cool. They give you a lot of information every month and, you know, some discounts and some free stuff and a bunch of good things like that. So check them out, too. I was excited and sort of like, I don't know, relieved to finally get PBW after having to use these like janky other keg cleaning things for a couple months. Because every time I go to Moorbury, I just forget. And I don't know, man. Stuff is night and day. It's just a night and day difference. I love it. Yeah. I love it so much. So anyway, we're going to get out of here. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later. Go ahead. Go ahead.
You want to send your beer into us.
Yes.
You email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com.
That's right.
We love having homebrew on our show, and lately we've been having it on a lot more when we're not interviewing Schlenkerle. But the hobby is still alive and well, and
it is.
Had HomebrewCon last month, and it's good communing with our homebrewers again and having some fun and working on club stuff. We're trying to get our club brewing together and doing more stuff too, and keeping it interesting, keeping people going. So I kind of appreciate the kick in the pants too. To brew. I brew, several times a year, but not as much as I used to a long time ago. But
yeah, I thought it would be cool. I like it.
It was a good idea, man.
Out,
yeah.
Send in your, some people have offered to send in their version of our Mexican lager too.
Oh, really? Oh, that'd be sweet. I would love
to really do that. Yeah.
So when are we going to judge this thing? It's not going to be like a couple months, right?
Yeah, looking about probably 2 months out.
Okay.
We're in July, late July now, so probably September.
Well, and that's why we did the episode, we did the recipe live, so people could brew it. I thought that was the most interesting part, really. But yeah, anyway, check it out. You know, it's funny, Cooper, before we leave, you always go, Brian with an I, and we were at More Beer, and we put this under your account, and because it was easier for everybody, and Bill's like, Like, what's the email? And you told him, and he's like, is that Brian with a Y? It's like, like totally unironic. Like, he's just asking. And it's like, the only time I've ever seen anybody question how to spell Brian is this moment. It was very funny. All right, everyone, we're going to get out of here. If you're listening live, stay tuned. We'll be right back with another show. And if not, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Go live your life. Touch grass, kid.